Welcome to IntroCap Interviews. Today, Karen is speaking with Stephen Price, the president and CEO of Greywood Developments. Stephen provides overall leadership to Greywood and is responsible for developing and managing the implementation of the company's operating and growth strategies. Since joining Greywood, he has led the fundraising of over $680 million of equity and overseen developments valued at over $6.8 billion. He has 34 years of real estate industry experience and has held senior acquisitions, finance, and operating roles with Canadian private and public companies.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you today?
I'm great, Karen. How are you?
Very well, thanks. I'm delighted to have you here. And I thought that the Greywood story was definitely worth telling to our audience. And so given that you have such a longstanding career in real estate development, particularly in senior acquisition and operating roles, and you've been with Greywood since 2007, I thought you could just tell us about your career history and what led you to joining Greywood.
Sure, it'd be a pleasure. It's been a long time. I've been in real estate longer than some of the age of some of the folks in our team now. I used to always be the youngest guy in the room, and that's no longer the case. The good news is that with 34 years of real estate experience, I've seen a lot, and I've been through a lot of different changes in the market as it's shifted since the early 90s. So I started in real estate in 1990, graduated from Western, went to Ivy, and it was called the HBA program and still is. And I, like many business school grads, looked at all the different opportunities that were in front of us, and there were different streams. Some went into investment banking, others management consulting, some went into packaged goods. And there was a smaller stream that was pursuing a career in real estate. And I found this obscure listing for a real estate development company based in the thriving metropolis at the time of Bradford, Ontario. And I was immediately attracted to the opportunity to become a development project manager. And so I interviewed, was hired for that job. The family had come into 1990 with a very successful track record in development. It was an Italian family that had emigrated to Canada, and there were four brothers and one sister. All four brothers became successful real estate developers, starting as tradesmen, working their way up, and had amassed large amounts of land and cash and come into the early 90s well positioned for the future. But of course, the market wasn't there in early 90s. So I was there for just about 3 years and had a tremendous experience learning all about the real estate development world. We weren't starting a lot of new developments. There was a lot of planning involved and a lot of completion of developments underway. So I learned what it was like to present a development plan to small town mayors and to financially model developments and to really learn the nuts and bolts of the business while working closely with the family and some outside advisors. From there, in the early 90s, it was clear that we were in for a bit of a turmoil, and the real estate was in a significant downward trend. The theme at the time was survive to 95. And so with that, I shifted my career into real estate restructuring, and I worked for a small asset management company. It was really led by one strong individual who was very busy, too busy, helping real estate owners, private and institutional, restructure portfolios and individual assets of real estate. And it was an amazing experience. And I, in that particular spot, I learned all about the financial structuring of real estate and tax structuring, and got quite involved in the operational side of mostly income property within these portfolios. And as advisors to these private and institutional owners, we began to oversee the real estate once restructured as an asset manager, and built our portfolio up to over 60 assets, and we had about 2,000 investors. I'm still in my 20s at the time, progressing into my early 30s, and it was just incredible exposure to work through the restructuring process of broken real estate. In fact, the two most challenging areas of real estate are, in my mind, are restructuring and development. One, you're fixing somebody else's problems, and development, you're creating new projects and which have their own challenges that you have to overcome.
And Stephen, were that's all in the GTA? I missed that. Or
No, it was not. It was actually Canada-wide. We had properties in Calgary, Vancouver, and mostly in the GTA, I would say. But there, it was quite a diverse portfolio, and also by asset class, office, mm-hmm. industrial, retail, retirement homes, hotels, and residential. So it was just an incredible time, an incredible era to learn about real estate. Not much development at that point, of course. It was really about income property. And that culminated with the creation of a public company called Acanthus, Acanthus Real Estate Corporation, which we took public in 1998. I was 31 at the time. We had a very small team. So again, the learning was very high. The work intensity was very high as well. And so that created liquidity for our investors, which was really what they were primarily seeking, value and liquidity. Many of the owners of the real estate were essentially trapped, sometimes due to tax, sometimes due to just the illiquid nature of the properties they were involved in. So we rolled these assets together into a private company. And then our promise was to seek a public listing, which we ultimately achieved. Wow. Once public, we had raised a bit of capital. We started to grow and became more focused on the residential marketplace. And ultimately, others saw great value in the company more than the public markets did. And we were subject to a bidding war, and we sold to a subsidiary of the Caisse de dépôt in the end in 2000. I took a little time off and considered options, but realized that I had built up quite a bit of experience in real estate. Now development and operational financial acquisitions, a lot of transaction work. So I in the end, decided to accept a position with GWL Realty Advisors. And what appealed to me there was, first of all, I knew a few of the folks on the team, and I thought, you know, maybe I would learn something. But most importantly, I thought I would learn how a larger operation functions. The largest deal that I did, acquisition I did in Acanthus, was in $40 million. The first deal I did at GW Realty Advisors was $120 million. So I wanted an opportunity to work in bigger transactions and learn how the governance and operations, the big operation function. And so shortly after joining, within the first year, we had quite a bit of success growing. And also we were selling some assets because GWL was purchasing Canada Life during my tenure. I was offered a choice of different opportunities of what I wanted to do, continue in acquisitions or perhaps pursue corporate development. And Paul Finkbeiner, the president at the time, was very generous in allowing me to consider what I might want to do next at the company. And I chose the residential multifamily business platform, which had some challenges. And I was given a tremendous amount of discretion, which is where I work best, or when I work best, to restructure, reorganize, and design an apartment building multi-residential platform that would be effective for GWL, allowing it to grow and operate to the highest level. So I did that. And at the end of 5 years, as I committed to Paul, I left the organization. I made a 5-year commitment to stay there because I wanted to return to my true passion, which was real estate development. Okay. And I talked to a number of firms. I'd been approached on that basis. And this company that I really wasn't familiar with, called Greywood, was searching for an SVP of corporate development, somebody who could come in and help design the platform to endure over time. One of the founders had recently passed. This is 2006. And in 2007, I was retained to come in as this new outsider to examine and design the platform again for the future. And so I've been at Greywood ever since. It's been over 16 years now. Came in as SVP Corporate Development, and that progressed to Chief Operating Officer in the next couple of years, and I've been the CEO for over 10.
Wow.
Go ahead.
No, it sounds like, you know, the foundation that you have built your career upon, it just made so much sense for you to be led to doing what you're doing today. And my next question is really for you to share the story about the founders, Garnet Watchhorn and Moshe Tamari. I know that when you shared that story, when I visited your boardroom, I was really quite fascinated, not only in the story, but just the way you tell it. And it's a great partnership story. So if you wouldn't mind sharing that with us.
I'd be happy to. And, you know, it's continued to be a great partnership environment. Unfortunately, Mr. Tamari died in 2006, as I've mentioned. Tamari and Watchhorn met in the early 80s and did a transaction together. It was in Florida, and it involved a hotel property. It was successful. They met originally because Mr. Tamari's son-in-law was a partner at Davies Law Firm, and Garnet Watchorn's brother was a senior partner. And in their conversations, thought it might be appropriate that Tamari and Watchorn meet because of their mutual interest and capabilities in real estate, yet very different people. Tamari was the Israeli who moved to Montreal, became a cab driver, and really had a sense of land and value and pulled himself up by his bootstraps. And Watchorn was very educated and came out of university, immediately landed a senior financial position, and ultimately ran a couple of organizations that had a diverse investment program, including venture capital, public securities, real estate, and so on. But real estate was what captured Garnet the most, and within his platforms was able to really engage and develop a skill set in real estate development. And with the two of them having a similar passion for real estate, that first transaction where they came together proved that they could work together on a handshake. And they continued to work together from the early 80s through the formation of Greywood in 1985 to Mr. Tamari's passing in 2006. And now John Ulmer, the son-in-law of Mr. Tamari, continues to act as vice chairman of our firm. He's very engaged as an owner and a member of the board of directors. And Garnet is the chairman of the organization. And I've continued to operate the business on behalf of the ownership. We are a private business, and employees do have, leadership team do have an interest in the business, as do I. And so that partnership environment continues to operate. It continues to be the foundational element of Greywood that allows us to operate, I think, so cohesively as a group.
Yeah. Oh, great. Well, thanks for sharing that. Greywood today has approximately $6.8 billion in assets, and the portfolio consists of 83 properties across North America. So, Stephen, when we spoke recently, you had said that Greywood has an old-fashioned approach, not moving at light speed, and Greywood is very professionally and analytically managed with tempered ambition. I really liked that. Can you provide an overview of Greywood's business today and describe the investing approach for your private equity funds to give our listeners an overview of the strategy?
Yeah, I guess I should probably, I don't know if I should have said old-fashioned. I would say conservative is probably the better descriptor for the business.
I don't think old-fashioned.
Greywood, we have predominantly been a development operation focused in residential properties. And residential would also include, we built the Ritz-Carlton in Toronto, so it includes hotels, and we built retirement homes. But our main business has been housing, both low-rise and certainly in the past decade, high-density, high-rise housing, and with the majority of that activity in the GTA area. We raise money through private equity funds and closed-end funds, and that is the seed capital that allows us to acquire sites. And of course, there's bank financing and joint venture partners and so on that come into play. But we're conservative in the sense that we spend a lot of time evaluating every development opportunity, even before we pursue it in terms of making an offer. So we're highly respected as an organization for the analytic skill set that we bring to the table. When we're hiring a new analyst to come onto our acquisition team, we make them, of course, they go through an interview process, but we also make them evaluate a case and prepare pro formas sitting in our boardroom in advance of us formally deciding whether or not that they're a good fit for our organization. So analytics run deep in our business. I think another element of how we buy on the development side of our business is that we have a very simple approach. It's complex in implementation, but when we evaluate a property, we look at what that condominium building, for example, would sell for per square foot at the time we acquire it. And we also look at the costs of developing that building, again, at the time we build it. We make some exceptions because governmental charges accelerate much faster than other costs. And we also, of course, are looking at interest rate yield curves and incorporating those in. But fundamentally, today's revenue and today's cost. And if it makes sense then, under that light, then it really has acted as a protector of our investors' capital through the development cycle, which can be as long as 8 or 9 years for a project. So there's no absolute certainty of where the financial metrics come out at the end. But if you start with a simple formula that is not elevating the revenues nor underestimating the costs, then you can really protect your margin through the development cycle much more readily than if you get overly ambitious with your forecasting of future outcomes. So that's our development side, but we also have an asset management side. We've always managed income property, but we've recently been contracted to manage larger portfolios of real estate. And so we have an asset management division within our organization that is actively managing $1.6 billion worth of assets among a number of asset classes, residential, office, retail, but predominantly industrial. So we have the industrial side as a dominant asset class together with our residential side, in particular residential development. And we've integrated construction. We have our own construction company that performs all of our construction activity in Ontario. We have our own sales, marketing, leasing organization within the Greywood umbrella. And then, of course, as I mentioned, the asset management division. So we being in control of outcomes is very important to us. We don't actively participate in club investments where responsibilities get shared amongst a number of talented organizations. We are the lead in all the development activity that we undertake. We have great joint venture partners, but we need to have our finger on the trigger for all important decisions. And we are the operating partner, all relationships that we undertake.
Planning has begun for the 13th Canadian Alternative Investment Forum, which will be held at Vantage Venues in Toronto on April 18th, 2024. Alternative investment themes and topics are currently being considered. If you are interested in learning more about speaking and sponsorship opportunities, please email Tori Brown at tbrown.introcap.com.
Can I just ask, I know that you also now have an advisory expertise. That's not the same as the asset management.
Well, it's very much related. Yes.
It is. Okay. Yes. I was going to ask you to share that with us because you have such extensive experience I wanted to know what kind of clients would actually use Greywood to help them manage their own portfolios and what size would those portfolios typically be? Or what size of client would you typically attract?
Yeah. And I think we do have a lot of expertise in that area, both in managing development projects on behalf of others. In the early 90s, before my time at Greywood, we were contracted to work with a number of banks who were having trouble with some of their borrowers. And Greywood acted as the fee-for-service development construction manager to assume responsibilities in complete projects. And as you've seen in the market we're in today, there are some developers having trouble. And we believe that we've seen and heard that there is interest in us potentially participating in some of those problematic situations today. But when we speak about asset management, we're really dealing with existing assets, income properties. And it's something I've spent a tremendous amount of time working with, as have other senior members of our team. And so the advisory side has been, we've been receiving expressions of interest from primarily private families that have large portfolios of real estate where they're dealing with transition issues and liquidity issues, where the founding partners may have passed or aging and are looking for a succession plan, but may not exist within the family itself. Professional management with an understanding of how private families own real estate for Greywood, an opportunity. It's a challenge, obviously, for the families facing these dilemmas, but we know how to work with those families. So the advisory services can start with a valuation process that we would perform. And there are often third parties that are also providing appraisal analysis of portfolios. And then the structuring component of how do you create true liquidity? How do you allow people to stay? If there's multiple descendants of the founders, and how do you allow people to exit on economic terms that both parties would agree with, setting a governance structure and operating platform, both property management and asset management, and then extracting value from existing assets, and in some cases, adding through development initiatives. And that's this whole operate, finance, report, build requirement is something that Greywood has in-house. So we're very well positioned to do this. And there's demand in the market. And it's something that I think you'll see Greywood undertaking more. Not that we won't do other forms of advisory asset management work, but we see tremendous opportunity in helping advise families in this space. And in terms of size, these portfolios may range from 200 million to 2 billion and possibly larger. But the assets that were originally acquired by these families 30, 40 years ago and potentially added to over the decades have appreciated tremendously in value, and as has the complexity of not only the family situation, but the properties and portfolios themselves.
Yeah. Okay. So, Stephen, this really is a growth area for Greywood. And how would you find those clients, or how would they find you?
Well, so far they've been finding us, but we've now recognized that this is a service that we should be exploring and promoting in terms of Greywood's skill set and business expansion. So reputationally, we're known as being good problem solvers and good operators of development, but more and more people are also recognizing that we have very strong operational and deep and longstanding operational expertise. So referrals come to us through financial services organizations, banks, insurance companies, valuators, and other advisors to the business, as well as lawyers and accounting firms that deal with families that are going through these processes. So the business has come to us, but it's a much broader business initiative for Greywood. We're in the process of establishing a new vehicle to acquire properties on behalf of a series of families. We have experience in raising funds to provide capital to acquire development sites, and that would translate very nicely into the income property space. We also have public vehicle experience in our senior management team, and that, in terms of examining liquidity options, is also a useful body of knowledge that we can apply in the right circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a wonderful growth area for Greywood, and you know, looking forward to hearing how that's going to roll out. Many of our listeners here are real estate investors, and we all know that capital raising right now is a little bit more challenging. And so I wanted you to share some of your views about investing in the GTA in real estate, and maybe also just in Canada in general, and sort of your views on, you know, currently what's going on in the short term and what you think might be happening in the long term. I think listeners would be interested in hearing your thoughts there.
Sure, I'm happy to speak to that. I think, again, our main business has historically been the development of residential housing. And we have current operating activities in Calgary and in Toronto, Toronto being by far the largest operation. And I think the investment program in the GTA has been stalled in recent months. There's no bid. There's no buyer that is prepared to step in with the uncertainty that we're facing. We're currently raising a fund that is dedicated to acquiring development sites in predominantly GTA again. And we believe that there is an incredible opportunity to buy land at prices that are far lower than they were at the peak. And we're also seeing a return to normal in cost escalations. We have a view that costs will escalate over the next year at record low levels. In fact, as low as 0% cost increase. There's also a push to reduce bureaucracy and the cost of the taxes, the governmental taxes, municipal, provincial taxes associated with development. There have been some rollbacks in cost escalations in that front as well. And as is recognized broadly, there is a strong interest in producing more housing in this country. So there's a built-in willingness to support development that hasn't existed in the past. I'm not saying it's easy, but the environment is more favorable than it has been. So with all that being said, having capital and being able to pick from better sites than have been available, in many cases, some problems with the financial capital structure and current ownership, where Greywood may step in with fresh capital and has where we have great access to lenders and the expertise to implement, I think we really have a tremendous opportunity to expand our business and to take advantage of opportunities that haven't been available in the recent past. And together, when you consider the timeline of development projects, while sales are slow today, the volume of people sitting on the sideline looking for housing or investors who are anxious to increase their real estate portfolios and supply that housing, with the support of rental rates that will ultimately continue to support condominium sale prices, we believe that this lull in the market, this pause, will start to correct, particularly once interest rates are understood to be declining to more normal, longer-term rates. We believe that at this development program that we will implement with our 10th fund, or 10th closed-end development fund, will be perfectly timed to allow us to buy well and then to sell into a stronger market once all the approvals are in place. So 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road, when we're in the market selling projects that we acquire in Fund 10 over the next 2 years, we believe that the market will be strong again, and we'll be able to generate outsized returns because of our ability to buy good sites at good prices and then sell into an accelerating market.
Okay.
So overall, the investment market, when you think of it in terms of the context of housing in the GTA, I think it's the best sector to be in, and I think it's got a very strong future, and now's the time to be investing if you have the capital, and not many do.
Wonderful. I love the positive outlook. I was at a real estate conference recently, and it was, you know, doom and gloom, it so much so that you know that there has to be the other side, and you know, and you are close to the ground and know what's going on. So thanks for that.
I just wanted to add that, you know, yeah, the best opportunities that I've been involved in have been in difficult markets in the early 90s through to the mid 90s, in particular 2008, 2009. And now this market that we're in, it's there are opportunities that we will not see again for another 5 or 10 years, right, that we believe are out there or will be out there shortly. So it's a good market to be preparing to transact.
But will there be some casualties? I mean, will there be groups that are going to really be in trouble? And you know, is that where there's going to be opportunity?
Yes, and I think you're starting to read about them in the press today and yesterday and the day before. There will be some development entities that have stretched and are unable to continue to fund the significant interest costs that they've accumulated through the accumulation of multiple development sites and variable rate debt. And so it is a challenging environment to operate. And there will be landowners and development companies that struggle to make it through, and some won't. And there's a real shortage of liquidity for those players. And I think the opportunity for those that have capital is very strong.
Yeah. And Stephen, lastly, I wanted to ask if you could share an insight or offer some advice to investors, real estate investors that are listening today. And is there anything from your extensive experience that you would say to them, like right now at this time, how they should maybe be thinking or looking at things?
Well, I've always believed in diversification. Yeah. And a lot of the advice or comments I would make, I mean, if you're sitting here as a real estate investor today, you are where you are. And your primary concern today, I think most real estate investors' primary concern is liquidity. It is, how do I, you know, I have, if I own office buildings and I have a declining tenant base, how do I manage the cost of my capital at supporting these assets? And there's a significant diminution in value that is still, assets are still being marked to market now, but there haven't been a lot of trades. But as those trades start to happen and assets are marked down, they become harder to finance. And with declining cash flow, it's a struggle. And I think, you know, for somebody who has a portfolio of assets that where there are problems like this, I think realizing where we are in the marketplace and really focusing on liquidity strategies, which will mean selling good sites at low prices in order to retain the balance of a portfolio and keep going and you know, live another day. So I think as we come into downturns in the market, people hold on too long. There's a concept now I've been hearing called a hope certificate. As markets decline, property owners will try and bring in passive partners. And then when that doesn't work, they might move to allow an active partner to come in and possibly sharing in any fee income. And then as there are further declines, perhaps outright sales with no upside. But the hope certificate is the sale just before that, where a landowner will hope to retain some value that they perceived that they had at one time that no longer exists. But it gives some upside potential, potentially an option on some future value. But I think it's really examining, and what we did at our company starting 2 years ago was a deep dive into the liquidity position of our funds and our organization to closely examine where the cracks might be and how we might deal with them. So we've been extremely proactive in that. And I think I would say to any landowner, you're going to potentially get there. Your lenders will force you to get there potentially. So it's in your interest to come up with your own liquidity plans to protect the long term to the extent you can. For those going forward, stay diversified. You know, don't put all the eggs in one basket. It troubles me when I see development pro forma as a single asset. It has a huge return pro forma. And then you see investors going big into investing a significant portion of their cash into one transaction. And this is not a real estate as a whole, and development in particular, is not a business where you should be putting all your eggs in one basket. You should really consider diversifying, which is what we do in our closed-end funds. We offer a diversified investment program. And so every development is going to generate outsized returns, even though we are conservative in our approach. Some will do better than others. And we believe a basket of developments or a basket of income property is a better approach than trying to win with just one investment.
Right. Okay. Thank you. And thank you so much. That was a really great overview of your background, of Greywood's background and current position and future vision. So it's wonderful to have you here. And I look forward to staying in touch. And we really appreciate that the story's getting out there. Thanks.
Thank you, Karen. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Stephen. Bye-bye.
Karen will be back next month with an exciting new guest whom we'll be announcing soon. Thank you for listening to IntroCap Interviews. Bye for now.